Well, good morning and welcome. My name is George Davis. Delighted to welcome you to the Hershey Free Church. Some of you, maybe this is your first time here. Others of you, maybe you've been traveling during the summer. And whatever brings you here, we're glad to welcome you this morning. And today we're continuing a series we've entitled, Who Are We? We're taking a few weeks just to talk about what's our identity as a church. Early in the summer, we talked about our identity as individual followers of Christ. Now we're thinking in terms of who are we as a church? How are we to think about church? And with that in mind, I'd like you to hear the stories of a couple of people in our church who are in one of our life groups. I'm going to invite those guys to join me right now. And we're going to just talk a little bit about what it means to be part of a life group in the Hershey Free Church. If you're not familiar with life groups, we've got a number of life groups. They meet throughout the region. Often they meet twice a month. And so this is one of our groups. I think you guys are six couples. Is that right? Amy, would you introduce the group to us, just who's up here?
Absolutely. We have Grant and Jess Myers. We have the Newlands Dorcas and Ray. They didn't make it easy for me. With the Gaffneys, John and Crystal, myself, Amy Bergner, and my husband, Tim, is who's with us right now.
Right. So we've got six families that include 12 young kids, right?
Yes.
In my book, that's chaos, but...
all under 10?
Yes.
Oh, well, as they'd say in the South, bless your heart. So... Let's just talk a little bit about your group experience. Now, what I'd like to ask is this. What is it like for you, and how does a group make a difference in your life such that it's different than simply coming to church on a Sunday morning?
Well, as a believer, we come into a huge church, and we see all the other believers that are around us. Moving into a life group, though, it makes it smaller. It shrinks it down, makes it more tangible for you to be kept accountable, as well as to keep others accountable and to live life. It's a journey as a believer, and it's great to have people to walk alongside that.
Cool.
We have even more of an example of that. Last fall, my husband and I, we almost lost our son due to being born prematurely. And through that time, I'd spent a month in the hospital, and then our son spent 3 months in the NICU. And during that time, our small group just really showed the body of Christ. They came out as soon as they found out was being hospitalized. They started out a 24-hour prayer thing. We were getting emails. Everyone was signed up for this hour, so-and-so is praying, and so forth. We had a bathroom remodel that was in process of being done, which we couldn't do. They came and they finished that for us. They did meals, visitations within the hospital. They did so much for us. It's more than we can even explain. You know, it's beyond just coming to the Sunday service where you're with many, many people, where this group of people came and truly supported us throughout those really trying 4 months where life really turned upside down for us.
So you guys finished the bathroom. Really?
They finished it.
They finished it. Well, I just want you to know, I've got these stairs that need to be done at my house. So if your group just needs an alternate place to stay, it's all grand. That is great. Okay. Now, that's such a cool story. In fact, I've also heard you guys have had people that have moved to other parts of the country. You packed them up, and you were part of that. But one of the members of your group said, "We all know how to get into each other's houses." And I thought, that's a great testimony to doing life together. Okay, so one other question. So how has this group helped you grow spiritually?
So we all meet as a couple without our kids once a month to do Bible study, so we have some place to start. But beyond that, it's great to see each other and see how each other do life. It's one thing to say, you know, I discipline my child. It's another thing to see how we all discipline our children, how we can grow from that by seeing how each other live their life and what they do. The other thing is I'm doing this for my children. I grew up, and my parents were in a life group. I think they were called community groups then. And I remember those friends that I grew up with, they're my Christian friends, their peers, and then I got to see the adults be my role models and the Christian role models in my life. My parents were intentional with that, and I want to be just as intentional with my children, that they have peers who are their age who are going to grow up and learn about Jesus, and they're going to sing the same songs, and they have someone they can go to, friends they can go to, and then they have, you know, Ray and Grant and Jess who they can go to and look up as strong Christian adults.
That's great.
Well, for me, I've been just challenged to go deeper in my faith through our small group. When you have conversations that hit home personally, I've had many one-on-one conversations with Ray where we've really, you know, dove into some deep conversations, and it's really challenged me to go deeper. We've had times where I remember one where I was driving to one of my plants in Ohio that I work for, and we just got together and we prayed for like 45 minutes while I was on the phone with him, and you know, just times like that where you have the ability just to dive in with someone who is on the same level as you, that has the same desire as you, that's kind of pushing you as well to go deeper. That's really what our group has done, giving you the ability to do that instead of just being in a community service where, you know, you don't have that one-on-one interaction or that that other peer that's coming alongside you just to bring, you know, bring you up in your faith as well, and them also wanting to gain something from you. So there's ability to give and to take in our small group, which has been wonderful.
Well, great. Well, thank you for sharing part of your story. You guys are just a great encouragement. It's just great to see how a big church has become smaller in your lives and how you're doing life together. That's a core value for us as a church. So thank you for living out and living that out in an intentional way. Let's give them just a round of applause for appreciation. Thank you, guys. As I said, we're continuing talking about who we are as a church. And so you heard just some of their life experiences in terms of what church looks like for them. And as we continue this morning, I want you to do a thought experiment with me. I want you to think about a particular concept. And I just want to ask you, what comes to mind when you hear this word, okay? So here's the word. What comes to mind when you hear the word family? My guess is for most of us, there are all kinds of associations and thoughts that come to mind when I say the word family. Maybe for many of us, depending on season of life, and if you're part of a family right now, what that looks like, maybe you think about shared experiences, family traditions. If you're here, you've raised kids, they're now gone, maybe you have these memories of at times, you know, dinners around the table or what that looked like, shared family traditions, how we do holidays, things that were a part of our family, vacations, all of that. For us, in our family, I think one of the things we share, one of the memories that will be an important part of our family legacy is just travel. Travel's kind of an important thing in the Davis household. And for us, one of the funny things is when our kids were younger, I'm all about, you know, visiting historical sites and museums, but I realized early on if I could connect it to a movie, that would just, you know, that would make things go so much smoother. So I still remember shortly after we moved to Pennsylvania here, you know, I wanted to take my kids to Philadelphia, so we're in Philadelphia for the first time, and we're walking up to Independence Hall, and one of my sons is maybe 6 or 7 at the time, and he looks up and he stops when he sees Independence Hall, and he says, "Dad, that building is a national treasure." And that, you know, I was one of the, okay, this is how we're going to do historical slides. So, you know, we're going to the Smithsonian, and that was in Night at the Museum. And, right, so we the series of places we visited that all had these kind of media connections. And I think shared memories like that are a part of what it means to be family. And I think at its best, family involves relationships of encouragement, of support, relationships where you learn the best lessons about life and living well. Those of you who are Steeler fans, you know Jerome Bettis, right? Was just, go ahead, have your moment, that's fine. God is just, go ahead, have you, no, I'm gonna stop before I say all the things I'm thinking. So anyway, so you saw, I mean, that was just a powerful moment. For those of you who don't know, Jerome Bettis inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he tells his life story during the ceremony. Talked about his father, a hardworking man, put him through school. As he's going off to college, his dad says to him, "You know, son, I don't have a lot to give you, but one of the things I can give you is a good name. Don't mess it up." And you're like, wow, that's a powerful moment. And then what was even more amazing is Bettis came right to the end of his presentation. He looks at his son and says, "This is what I'm giving you, a good name. Don't mess it up." And you're like, you know, that is family at its best. Family, right, is these relationships where we're for one another, where we build into one another's lives, where we learn significant lessons about life and living well. That's family. But I think also, here's the reality, and we have to acknowledge this. Even as family can be encouraging and invigorating, it can also be painful and disappointing. And the truth is, when I put this up and I ask you what images, what experiences, what memories come to your mind when I talk about family, for some of us, they're not positive. For instance, maybe you're here and you would say, you know what, I'm not part of a family right now. And, you know, you come to church. Churches always seem to be about families and young families like we just saw on the stage. And maybe when we talk about family, you actually feel excluded. Or maybe for you, you know, the truth is, we talk about family, and for you, family's been a source of estrangement, disappointment, and hurt. When my wife Rose and I meet with couples that are exploring marriage or they're engaged, they're preparing for marriage, often we have a conversation that revolves around this question. I will ask, as you now prepare for marriage, what are the things you want to bring into your marriage from your family of origin? And what are the things you want to leave behind? I still remember asking a young couple this, and this, you know, gifted, intelligent, articulate young woman looks at me and she says, "What do I want to bring from my family of origin?" Absolutely nothing. My family was toxic. I don't want to bring anything of that into my new relationship. And the truth is, if you heard her life story, you would start to understand where she's coming from. And I think even for those of us who've really, you know, tried to build healthy families and worked at it and tried to be committed to it, even in those situations, isn't it the case there's often this nagging sense of maybe I failed, right? There's this nagging sense, oh, I'm not sure if I would do it the exact same way if I had to do it again. I remember another kind of wedding scene, talking to a father of the bride after I'd had the privilege of officiating his daughter's wedding. And it was just this great family. A couple of years prior to that, I'd actually officiated the wedding of the older son in the family. So I'd gotten to know both these siblings, and they were very different, yet each of whom was thriving in their own way. And I was just so impressed. I just went up, you know, I went up to the father after that second wedding. I said, "Hey, I just want you to know, I just love your kids. I am so impressed with these young adults that are part of your family." I said, "I don't know what you did, but man, if I could bottle it, you guys have done it well." And he looks at me and he goes, "Oh, George." He says, "It's just the grace of God." And he said, "You know, I look back, we didn't always know what we were doing, and at times we made some big mistakes." And it was just fascinating for me, because this wasn't false humility. This was just a nagging sense of maybe it could have been different. And, you know, I looked at this guy, and if I had a parenting hall of fame, this guy would be in it. And yet, even for him, there are these nagging negative associations with family. So what comes to your mind when we talk about family? Now, here's the reason I ask this question. As we continue our series on who we are as a church, I ask this question, and I think clearly it's obvious that family is a topic that generates a range of emotions and experiences, positively and negatively. But I bring this topic up because when you read the New Testament, one of the prominent images that the New Testament uses to describe the church is this: the church is family. In a moment, I'll give you just a couple of examples. But that leads to this question. Why would the leaders of the early Christian movement use an image that for us can so easily generate negative memories and emotions? I mean, why would the New Testament use the imagery of family to describe the church? I was reading a ministry blog recently. You know, it's kind of a blogger who kind of writes primarily for pastors and church leaders. And here's what he said. He said, look, when you talk about church, be careful. Avoid talking about the church's family. Because whenever you gather as a church, many of the people there will be people who have negative experiences with family. And, you know, I get what he's saying. And that's probably the case among this many people here this morning. And yet, if we take Jesus seriously, we have to wrestle with this idea that he addresses the church as family. You can't avoid it. As Jesus describes the movement he is starting, as he describes his followers, he describes them as a family. So what I want to do this morning is just take a few moments to kind of explore the reality that as church, we're family. And let's think for a moment about why Jesus and his followers want us to understand ourselves this way. Now, as we get started, let's just look very quickly at a couple of passages. So if you have a Bible, join with me in turning to Mark chapter 3. If you don't have a Bible, hopefully there's one in a pew close to you. So Mark in the New Testament. Let's look at the church's family. We come to Mark chapter 3. This is early in Jesus' public ministry. And it becomes apparent that Jesus' words and deeds are so radical. They are so different that people are starting to wonder, you know, is this guy demon-possessed? I mean, is he crazy? And apparently that kind of concern is somehow expressed to his family. And what we're going to see in Mark chapter 3 is his family then embarks on what we would describe in our own lingo as a time of intervention. So to set the stage, if you're in Mark chapter 3, let me just read for you first of all verses 20 and 21, right? Then Jesus enters a house. Pay attention to that. We'll come back to that. And again, a crowd gathered so that he and his disciples were not even able to eat. So we see Jesus in a home with his disciples, his followers. And then Mark says, when his family heard about this, they went to take charge of him, for they said, he is out of his mind. Okay, so that's going to set the scene for the final episode in this chapter, which begins at verse 31. So now let's skip down and see how the scene continues. Verse 31 and following. Then Jesus' mother and brothers arrived, standing outside. Notice they're outside the house. They sent someone in to call him. A crowd was sitting around him, and they told him, your mother and brothers are outside looking for you. Now listen to his response. This is absolutely revolutionary. Who are my mother and my brothers? He asked. Then he looked at those seated in a circle around him and said, here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does God's will is my brother and sister and mother. Now, I'm at a loss to describe to you how radical this is, because we think differently about family than was the case in the first century. But you need to understand, in a first century Jewish context, family really is significant. In ways you and I don't always understand. I mean, family was at the core of your identity. You're a Jew. It's really at the core of who you are as a nation. You were expected to have a deep sense of honor and value and loyalty to your family. But now Jesus' family shows up. And in essence, Jesus says, oh, really? You think those people are my family? No, let me show you my family. My family are the people who are seated right here around me. I mean, this is just absolutely shocking. In fact, to make the point further, and this is somewhat subtle, but I think it's intentional on Mark's part as he tells the story of Jesus. Notice carefully, Mark has indicated that Jesus is in a home, right? And he has indicated that his biological family is outside. Now, notice the reversal of expectations because, in a home is a place you expect to hang out with family. So much of family life takes place in a home. But in this case, Jesus' biological family is on the outside. It is his followers who are on the inside. And it's a vivid depiction of the followers of Christ, the church,
is family. Not surprisingly, then, future generations of Christians adopted Jesus' language, and they continue to describe the church as family. So if you read the history of the early church, if you read those early letters written right to the first generations of Christians, you will see family language used throughout. I'll just give you one example. This is 1 Corinthians chapter 1, kind of a typical example from the Apostle Paul. Paul says, I appeal to you, brothers and sisters. Quick note here. Paul uses a term that means brothers, but he uses it inclusively. So the best way to translate that is brothers and sisters. He's talking to all the people in the church. He says, I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that all of you agree with one another in what you say, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly united in mind and thought. And we know from the opening four chapters of 1 Corinthians, there's some tension and division in the church. And Paul says, look, you've got to deal with it. And in telling them to deal with the conflict, he says, and remember your family, right? Remember your family. You've got to work through this because you're family. And to show you how radical this concept is, there's something else you need to know about the first century. Joseph Hellerman is a scholar who's done some of the best work on the whole imagery of the church as family. He's actually done this book, When the Church Was a Family. And in the book, he points out that in ancient Mediterranean cultures, when you talked about family, there was a great emphasis placed on blood relationships, on your bloodline. And among other things, that meant this. Even when you got married, you were to maintain a deep sense of loyalty and responsibility and commitment to your brothers and sisters, because those were the blood relationships that would last the longest in your lifetime. Blood really was thicker than water. So notice this. As you read the letters of the New Testament and you see these authors talking to these people and at times saying, brothers and sisters, brothers and sisters, brothers and sisters, they are invoking kind of the deepest sense of family relationships and now applying them to church. Because a church is family, your family. So with these examples in mind, let me just make a couple of observations about family that help us understand not only our own families, but ourselves as a church family. First of all, at its best, family involves connection, right? At its best, family involves connection. Hopefully, at some point in your family, you have experienced relationships where you we're for one another. My parents are for me. We're for each other. There's a element of love and encouragement. I love, you know, one of the highlights for me as a dad is the fact a couple of our sons are in sports, and I just love being at those events. And kind of a running joke in our family is, did you hear me at the game? Because if you didn't, I can yell louder. I don't care what else goes on at the game. I want you to know that I'm for you. Yes, Dad, I heard you. You don't need to do anything else. I love it. But see, family involves connection, right? And that's true for the church as well. Last week we looked in John's gospel, right, at this powerful scene where Jesus gives his disciples an example of what this connection can look like, an example of serving one another, being for one another when he washes their feet in John 13. And then he says, what? I'm giving you this as a new commandment to love one another. And he says, this is to be a defining mark of who we are as a church, that we love one another. People are to come into church and go, I can't believe it. They helped one another move. They finished a remodeling project. They organize meals. They drive and pray on the phone. Really? Yeah, that's what Jesus said 2,000 years. This is to be a distinguishing mark. We are connected. We are for one another. Consequently, when you get to the letters of John, remember, John was part of that first group. He was there when Jesus washes the disciples' feet, and it makes such a powerful impression on him that we get to this point where he's now a Christian leader, and he's writing a church that's gone through some heartache and pain and confusion, and he's saying, let me remind you of what it means to be a follower of Christ. And in 1 John, we read these words. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and our sisters. Do you hear that? Of course we're connected. Of course we are for one another. We are family. And this is what Jesus was creating. And notice in these examples from the New Testament, the idea of love here, and it's not kind of a sentimental emotion, right? It is being for one another. Jesus washed their feet. John talks about loving one another, right, in actual deeds. And the expectation is that's what we do in family. We take initiative. For instance, has this ever happened in your family? Has this ever happened? Maybe you're going to have a meal together. You know, I realize that's not always possible to do it regularly, but you're going to have a meal together. Maybe it's a holiday, and we've got larger family there, and everybody, we're kind of getting ready, and we get the meal done, we sit down, and throughout the entire process, there's someone there who has just assumed that everybody else is there to serve him or her. Does that sound familiar? And then at some point, someone looks at this family member and says, "Excuse me, don't you realize this is not a restaurant." Has that ever happened in your family? Maybe not. In our family, the line that you will hear from time to time is this: there is no kitchen fairy. And that's the way we say, no, you know what? We do this together, you know? We're family. You're going to help with the dishes. You know, there are certain responsibilities we do because we're family. We do it together. Dad, why do I have to do chores? Because we're family. We're connected. We work together. And this is part of the way we show our love to one another, by working together. So this is why you heard these stories a few moments ago, because we're family. And so, you know, I would just challenge you and encourage you, if you feel disconnected, maybe you say, you know, this is a large church and I slide in and slide out, I haven't kind of found my place, then let's ask you, what steps are you taking to figure out where you can be connected? Where are you investing in some relationships? Have you discovered opportunities to serve and invest in others in a meaningful way? Because you see, this isn't a restaurant. This is family. And we're to be connected. So we've given you this brochure as a reminder of ways you can get connected. Matt will be available after this service in Connecting Point right out here. And I would just challenge you, if you know you really feel disconnected, this can really be a next step for you to figure out where can I get connected so that what I've heard this morning can become part of my life experience. So family involves connection. Furthermore, family involves growth. We don't always pay attention to this, do we? But, you know, let's be honest, so much about what we learn concerning life, we learn in our families. You learn to walk, you learn to talk in your family. We grow up in the context of our families. Most likely the people who have corrected you the most in your life are in your family, right? From the earliest days, sit up straight, don't chew with your mouth open. You know, all the big stuff of life, right? So much of it we learn in family. Likewise, church is to be a place of growth. A place where in the context of relationships, we learn what it means to follow Christ and be a part of his mission. Notice just another passage, right, from Paul's writings. Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. Now notice underlying this passage is the expectation. We have a responsibility to one another. This is to be a place where we are growing, and if somebody gets off track, we need to have kind of the relational ability to help them continue moving in the right direction. Why? Because we're family. And it's interesting, if you pay attention to this, Paul often in his letters invokes the family imagery. He often, you know, addresses the early Christian movement as brothers and sisters, when he is specifically reminding them, you have a responsibility to one another. Your family. So this is to be a place of connection, right? And it's to be a place of growth. Now, this sounds great up to this point, but you know what? There's one other thing we need to acknowledge if we're going to be honest about families, and that is this. Families involve connection and growth, but family is always messy, right? Family involves connection and growth, but family is always messy. Here's the deal. You know what? You and I, we can dream of the perfect family. We can dream of the perfect church. And at times, I do. No. But you know what? It's not going to happen. Why? Because family is always messy. And let me give you two reasons why family is always messy. First of all, family is always messy because we are different people. Here's what I mean by that. I mean, I think one of the things we have in common, regardless of your family experience, we didn't get to choose our family, did we? We didn't get to choose the people in it. And the truth is, most likely in your family, there are people you wouldn't normally associate with, right? People you wouldn't normally hang out with, except for the fact their family. And the truth is, in our families, there are people who are very different. And not surprisingly, then, I think most of us, isn't this, let's be honest, most of us at some point, maybe when we're growing up, we feel this way, but most of us at some point have wished, why couldn't I be in a different family? You ever wrestle with that? When our kids were younger, they were absolutely convinced we would be the last family on earth to get a gaming system. We eventually got one, but it was a long and arduous journey for our family. I think I mentioned this before, but you know, what would happen? We'd have these ongoing conversations. Dad, when are we gonna get this system? And you know, and we would hear about all the different families and all the different systems they had. This was just an ongoing conversation in our family. Finally, I got the idea, I'm gonna do something fun with this. So one day I got a shoebox, and I put a big X on it. And I gave it to one of my sons, and I said, Here's your Xbox. Oh, it gets worse. And then, so then I took it and I spun it around on my finger and I said, wow, it's an Xbox 360. Oh, he still sees about that moment. We talked about it last night. I said, that wasn't one of my finest moments as a dad. Mm-mm. It's kind of one of those moments where you wished you were in a different family. Mm-hmm. Right? And we would even have these conversations sometimes when we were talking about this. Oh, Dad, you know, this family, they've got the Xbox. Dad, this family, they've got the Wii. And, you know, and we go on and on. And finally, in frustration, I would look at him and I'd go, well, why don't we call one of those families and see if they have an opening, right? And but the deal is, this is part of family. And we've got to understand this, that part of the messiness of family is that family brings together people who might not normally come together. So family is messy because we're different people. But not only that, and maybe this is more significant, family is messy, and let's just be honest, because we are broken people. We're broken people. We are sinful. We are imperfect. We are selfish. And we live that out in the context of family. And as a result, because we are broken, our families can be messy. And at times, the messiness becomes so profound that families cease to be a place of connection and growth. For some of you, I don't have to elaborate. You know that acutely, and you know that deeply. And I think it can become tremendously painful because I believe there's something within us that truly desires family to be a place of connection and growth. And whenever it doesn't happen, there's a sense of loss. I remember a few years ago being part of a men's group and kind of a, you know, pretty large group of guys. We were 12 guys and we were talking about what it meant to be fathers. And as we talked about that, we talked about some of our own experiences and our families of origin. And the guys went around the room, we shared different life experiences, lots of different stories, but a common theme that you heard from about two-thirds of the guys in the room was this. I knew my dad loved me, but he never told me. And it was fascinating because every time One of the guys said something like that. You could just feel the sense of loss. The sense that something is missing. And the tragedy is sometimes the mess becomes so difficult and acute that families cease to be a place of connection and growth. But here's what we have to be careful about. And we have to guard against this. Because families can be messy, if we're not careful, we will simply learn to protect ourselves from the mess. And maybe that's what's going on in your family, right? In some families, certain things are never talked about, certain issues we never work through. They're the family secrets or whatever, but because it's messy, we simply learn to protect ourselves. And you know, likewise, the same thing can happen in church. Churches get messy because we're family, and therefore we can decide, you know what, I'm gonna go to church, but I'm gonna protect myself from the mess. I'm only gonna hang out with people I like. I'm going to expect others to cater to my needs and my preferences. And if it doesn't happen that way, or if relationships get complicated, if I don't like what's going on, I just disengage. But here's the reality, and this is what you have to grab hold of. When you shield yourself from the mess, you are also shielding yourself from opportunities for growth and connection. Because those two take place in the context of family. I remember when I was a pastor in Fargo and got to know some of my colleagues in other churches, we over time observed there seemed to be this group of people that were Christian nomads, and they would kind of migrate at different times from among about a half a dozen churches. And there's this group of people, they always seem to be in flux. And you know, it's like, well, that church got a new youth pastor, that church has a new music ministry, and people were always moving, and they were nomadic, but what tragically they were missing out on was church's family. I think they thought at times, well, we're protecting ourselves from the mess, whatever that might be, but in the midst of that, they were missing out on opportunities for connection and growth. I mean, in my own life, some of my most transformational relationships have involved people that are very different than me. People I wouldn't normally hang out with, but it was church. This is family. And see, what we need to recognize is this. The ongoing result of Christ's work is not that you will have a perfect family or that we will have a perfect church. The ongoing result of his work is that his spirit can now be at work in the mess. I mean, read the letters to, I just love the Corinthian church. I mean, this was such a crazy church. I mean, they put the D in dysfunction. We got all kinds, you know, we've got sexual immorality. We've got leadership challenges. We've got political division. We've got people that don't have a clue of what it means now to live out their faith. And this, I mean, Paul is pulling his hair out as he deals with this church. It's an ongoing issue. And yet, even in the midst of that, Paul can say as he starts 1 Corinthians, thank God for the grace that you have been given in Christ Jesus. In other words, Paul is saying, you guys are crazy, but you know what? God's Spirit can be at work in the mess. We need to understand family. So pulling all this together, let me just make a couple of final observations. First of all, very practically, if you are dealing with issues in your own biological family and you are stuck and you admit, you know, we've just kind of developed this pattern of protecting ourselves, but somehow we're missing out on growth and connection, or I don't know how to deal with this, can I just suggest you, you know, we'd love to help walk with you through that. I'd love to talk to you further or connect you with someone like Pastor Omar on our staff who can help you think through how do I engage this mess in a healthy way. Secondly, as you come to church, I mean, if this is now your church home and your church community, will you recognize this is family? It's not a restaurant. You come, you're part of family. You invest relationally, financially. I need to be connected. And so maybe for you, a next step is finding out more about ways to get connected or ways you can serve and invest in the lives of other people. You need to see yourself as part of family. Furthermore, just look around at these other people, right? And just for a moment realize to be church means these people are part of my family. Now, you'll never have the opportunity to get to know all of these people well, but you will have the opportunity to get to know some of them well. And you need to realize in the context of family, we hurt each other, we disappoint each other, we look at things differently, and that's going to be a part of church. And when that happens, we don't raise our hands and go, oh my goodness, this is such a difficult place, there's conflict or there's disagreement. We raise our hands and go, yep, this is family. Because it's just like that in your family and you know it, right? And so we're not surprised by that. We understand. Yeah, there's conflict and there's disagreement. We don't always see eye to eye, but I don't just run away. I don't just protect myself because we are family. And family at its best learns to work through the mess. Because that's exactly where God can be at work. We're family. We're family. Now, I thought about in closing the service that I would say, we are, and you would say, a family, but I realized if I said, we are, you would say, Penn State. That's our family. So we're going to pray, okay? That's what we're going to do. Let's join me in prayer. Gracious Father. A few moments ago, we started by talking about families, and I do realize for some of us, that concept brings a range of emotions. And I realize there's some of us here that we feel a deep sense of loss or hurt or estrangement because family is messy, and it feels like we have experienced the brunt of that. And so, Father, I pray for those who might be here that really need, there's some stuff they need to work through. And I pray, man, if we can provide resources or help, just come alongside in those situations. I pray that people would be willing to engage that situation differently. But, Father, I pray your Spirit would just remind us that what he is doing is bringing us together as family. And yes, that is messy. It is difficult at times. It can be frustrating and disappointing. But in the midst of that, he can also be at work creating connection, opportunities for us to be for one another, and bringing about growth in the process. So, Father, may we not simply distance ourselves so that we protect ourselves from the mess. May we recognize that you can actually be at work in the mess, because this is your family. In Jesus' name, amen. Once again, thank you for joining us and spending part of your Sunday morning with us. Now as you go, just a simple truth. We are family. We're family. If you want to talk with Matt further, he will be out in the connecting point, and maybe that's a big step for you, but be willing to take it because we're family. Have a great week. We look forward to seeing you next weekend.